U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Hey, we made it to Friday afternoon. Welcome, everybody. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. A little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to one of the Colin Morris, the director of product management at Adobe Analytics. You know, they're looking ahead to holiday sales, specifically online sales, and they're going to be booming when it comes to this Christmas season. We'll kick that around with him a little bit later. Also, Dalton Balker from Crane Chicago Business will be here. But the big news is the jobs report was out today, and to help us understand all of that on a phone line now is Mark Hambrick from Bankrate.com. Mark, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it looks like everything's coming up rosy here.
Well, you know, it's the season for the plants to fade, but we see some green shoots here once again in the jobs report. You know, we have to think about the fact that more than 40,000 jobs were idled in this particular month because of the GM strike.
Right,
so
right.
You basically have to add those back in. And then, lo and behold, we had upward revisions for the previous 2 months. So without sort of running the numbers past everybody and sort of losing track of all that, the reality is that the outlook, not only for October, but for the previous 2 months, so the reality is that it was better than what we thought it would be.
So 128,000 jobs added. As you said, the GM strike idled 40,000 people. The government payroll dropped as well, right? Because census workers who had been doing the job weren't needed anymore, so that added to the decline. If you add those numbers in, we might have been around 200,000 jobs created.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to slice and dice it. There'll be other census workers added later as well. So, you know, we had previously had, you might say, some addition of workers in the previous couple of months because of the temporary census hires. And ultimately, while, you know, it's great to have people doing those jobs, it's not really about the trajectory of the economy and the temporary hiring piece. And the other part, which doesn't feed into this report, of course, Steve, is the fact that in the month of November, which is suddenly here, the retail trade will add about 500,000 temporary workers as well. Again, temporary, seasonal work, but, you know, that's income, that's employment.
Tell me about the previous month revisions upward. I mean, how significant is that?
Well, what I think you want to do here is just sort of then take the three-month average and get an idea of where that trajectory has been. So first of all, for the total non-farm average for the previous 3 months, that goes to 176,000. And then for the private sector, it's 154,000, the three-month average. So we're sort of there at 150 and 175. And remember, last year we were well above 200,000 on a monthly basis. So while we're sort of celebrating that we've moved the line up on the chart a little bit here, we need to remember also that, you know, we're 11 years into the economic expansion, and that the level of hiring at a basically 3.5% unemployment rate is not going to be as solid as it was before, in part because businesses may not have as many reasons to hire now as they did before. In other cases, it may be because they're having a difficult time finding the right kind of worker for the job.
Right. So while the numbers are up and revised up for the past 3 months or so, when compared to earlier this year, the hiring is down.
Yeah, compared to last year. So
okay.
I like to run sort of analysis of where we'd be at this point last year and where we are now, and there's no mistake about the fact that we're double-digit percentage below where we were a year ago.
And that's not something to be concerned about?
You know, I think that except for well-trained marathon runners, you know, most people don't run the race as well at the end of the race as they do at the very beginning. And so steady and slow does tend to be the strategy. And you know, we basically had a record expansion. The good news is that, you know, as we now sort of stare over the roof of the hood of the car and try to figure out, well, where we're going to be in 2020,
right,
fears of a recession that were even permeating financial markets last December can now be pushed aside a bit. And, you know, of course, what else has changed has been the fact that the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates three times, as we got this week, and that took basically 33% of the rate hikes that it put in place since 2015.
So Right. Earlier this year, everyone was saying a recession is coming. And look, a recession is coming. I mean, it's inevitable. But the numbers we've seen over the past several months indicate that it might not be coming as quickly as we thought.
Whether it's life or the business cycle, these cycles do end. So the question is, how imminent are those ends? And the good news is that, you know, we obviously just had reported 1.9% GDP for the just completed third quarter. And I can maybe imagine that perhaps we'll get some upgrades for the outlook for the current fourth quarter in terms of where growth will be as well. Obviously not 2.5 or 3, but still, I'd say, you know, pretty darn respectable this deep into the economic expansion.
So when is the recession coming? Tell us now, Mark.
Well, you know, they haven't yet put the betting parlor here at Capital One Arena where the Wizards and the Capitals play, and I'm not that kind of a betting person anyway. But, you know, here's the real takeaway, Steve, to be perfectly serious about it, and this is consistent, I think, with the take on your show as well as what we try to communicate to our bank rate audience as well, and that is that, you know, the news cycle is vicious. The economic cycle can sometimes be confounding and complicated. The reality is that we have to live our lives, right? And so part of that means that we need to try to live beneath our means financially, not live on the cutting edge of, you know, paycheck to paycheck, as about 40% of Americans do. And part of that means that we really need to try to save for emergencies, do a better job of that, and obviously to have a consistent retirement savings program no matter where we are in the course of our career. So, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about this week, Steve, has been the fact that, I mean, obviously you guys are champions when it comes to winter weather there on the West Coast. Obviously, wildfires have been the horrific experience there, and that underscores the need for basically having a short-term plan, you know, as part of the ready.gov piece, you know, where people have been talking for years about needing to have an emergency kit. Well, short-term or emergency savings is really part of that. So whether it's unemployment, whether it's an electrical outage, whether it's a blizzard that, you know, sort of parks us for a while, we really do need to not only have money in the bank, but probably a little cash in the house as well, because these storms of one kind or another do occur.
How are we doing on that? Because, you know, it seems that the better times get or the better we feel, the less likely we are to actually prepare for those moments.
Well, that's a good question, and I think, you know, our bank rate surveys, which we've been doing for a long, long time, have found that people have made it a higher priority to save in recent years, and you might say they've had more of a bit of a luxury to do that because the economy more broadly has enabled them or allowed them to do that. But the other part of that is that we can never really do enough. We don't want to be hoarders. You know, we don't want to be the one person that maybe dies being the surprise millionaire, but I think that just about, you know, certainly more than half of the population can do a better job of saving for both the short term and the long term.
Well, I'd like to say winter's coming, but Mark, we got 6 inches of snow here yesterday, so winter's here for some of us.
Well, there you go. It's chilly here in D.C., but we're not going to complain. We got a big parade coming up tomorrow.
I'm sure you do. Okay, let's go into the numbers a little bit more. The biggest job creation came from services in food and drinking establishments, which is interesting to me.
Absolutely.
So that tells me that we're freed up, right? We feel like we can spend money where we might not have been spending money there before.
Yeah, whether we should or not, really.
Right.
But, you know, leisure and hospitality, once again, sort of helping to lift these numbers, 61,000 there. And, you know, we've had steady jobs creation in areas like business and professional services, health care and social assistance. We have an aging population. The areas, of course, where we've been losing have included manufacturing. The goods-producing realm here was minus 26,000, but that was largely because of that strike-related issue. Mining and logging was flat, and that also has been an area that really hasn't had much to brag about here lately.
Wages were up 2.2%, but that's down from earlier this year.
Well, I tend to look at the year-over-year movement there, and we basically had a gain of 3% on an annual basis with average hourly earnings. The good news is that people at the lower end of the wage spectrum have been making more progress. We need to see more progress for not only those who are lower-paid workers, but even those that are in the middle part of the wage spectrum, because we've had a decades-long issue with income inequality in this country, where the middle class has basically been taking it on the chin. So to the degree that we keep the expansion going, keep the unemployment rate low, we can make more progress on those fronts.
And we will rely on you, Mark Hamrick at Bankrate.com, to make sure that happens.
It's a privilege to be with you, Steve. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
I always enjoy talking to you. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, and we certainly thank them for that. Okay, Thanksgiving is coming ahead. Halloween is behind us, but the holiday shopping is what we're focusing on now. And the numbers look pretty good, at least to my eyes. I'm no expert. Colin Morris he's the Director of Product Management at Adobe Analytics, and he's been looking over the numbers. He joins us now on the phone line. Colin, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. Yeah,
okay, so overall, right, the overall sales for the holidays, we're looking at a 4% increase. That's the expectation?
14%, actually, projected for online shopping, up to about $143.7 billion, which is 14% year-over-year growth from last year.
Right, no, I said 4% when you take on brick-and-mortar and online retail. I thought I saw 4% for that.
Right.
With 14% online, more and more, that's where we're buying our products, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And the rate of growth is happening. The trends of how marketing is happening, and certainly how consumption is happening, is changing over time. We have more, smartphone purchase consumption with mobile web, certainly more browsing, and overall, it's going to be a pretty unique year.
Cyber Monday is going to set a record.
Yeah, so we expect Cyber Monday to hit $9.4 billion, and that's comprises about 18.9% growth year over year. Part of the trend with that, we think, is that because there are fewer shopping days this year, 22 to be exact, since Thanksgiving is late, there will be a truncated time to be able to make a bunch of purchases. There's going to be about $1 billion left on the table this year because of the lack of shopping days, but conversely, we'll see between November and December about $1 billion in sales per day online.
Okay, so we're losing shopping days, and that would be maybe $1 billion a day. But overall, we're gonna make up for that billion elsewhere, right? We're still gonna spend more this year than we did last year.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, they're just the retailers are just gonna have a different set of levers to use this time.
How important is Cyber Week when it comes to these retailers? Is it 80%, 20%, 10%? I mean, how much we start talking a lot about Cyber Monday and all of that, but how much of that in the end really is that important?
Yeah, well, I mean, it accounts for about 20% of the total holiday season, so that looks like around $29 billion in revenue for that week.
But if it's
so pretty significant.
Okay, but 20%, I mean, that 1 week is that's just a little over or under 20% of the shopping season, isn't it?
Right. But we see that there's a lot of, with that truncation, with a bunch more promotions going on there, and with a bunch of deals and discounting and, volume plays happening across there, there's a lot more interesting things that we see on that week than we have in the past.
You mentioned
a lot of that kind of bleeds together.
You mentioned shopping via the telephone. I'm doing that now more and more. I'm falling victim to Instagram ads, half of which I return. But we are being more and more comfortable when it comes to shopping from our phone. And retailers are recognizing that.
Yeah, definitely. Smartphone shopping, we think, is going to account for 47% of overall holiday growth this season. We're suspecting that Americans will spend about $14 billion more this season on their phones compared to last year. A lot of that is mobile web, not necessarily apps, since retailers have different strategies for that. But that trend overall is very strong.
And tell me about the notion of buying online and picking up in the store. How is that growing, and why is that important for retailers?
Yeah, So this is a great trend, I think, for brick and mortar stores. We see 39% more buy online, pick up in store orders placed this year compared to the same period last year. 37% of consumers have told us they're planning to use that this holiday season. And 82% of those shoppers say that they'll likely shop for additional items while picking up their online order. So from a cross-sell perspective, from a merchandising perspective, from an overall kind of brick and mortar offering, I think it's going to be something strong for local businesses.
What's the appeal then for shoppers? I mean, if they're going to go to the store anyway, why wouldn't they go to the store and buy? I guess they don't have to leave their home before they know for sure what's going to be waiting for them.
The consumers are 19% more likely to convert in the week leading up to Christmas at retailers that offer that, which yield about a 10% boost in revenue. So we're assuming that it's the people who kind of want to take things into their own hands to make sure that they're not missing off, if something ships late and doesn't get there in time, gives them a little bit more of a sense of control if they're shopping in that last, week in a run-up to Christmas.
Okay, and so, I always hear that there are specific days to buy specific products. I don't know how true that is, but, I mean, if it is there an online Black Friday product that we should be focusing on?
Yeah, so for November 29th this year, for Black Friday, we're seeing that there's an average savings up to 9% on appliances and an average saving up to 6% on sporting goods, which is different than, say, December 1st, where toys, you can save up to 32% on that category, and, say, computers in that same day, you can save up to 18%. So there's definitely different trends depending on the day in terms of the clustering of product types.
Colin, do you have a crystal ball at Adobe Analytics? I mean, how do you come upon these figures?
Well, we measure about 55 million unique products. About 80 of the top 100 U.S. web retailers utilize Adobe Analytics. So we have a lot of options in terms of aggregating and looking at broad trends across this vertical and others.
Do you focus on, are you talking about known sales coming up, or these are just predicted sales?
The predictions that we're putting right now, we'll track it over the next coming weeks and update the numbers in general. But the predictions for, say, like the $143 billion is what we expect this year, given, the last few years and kind of what we've seen in trends in general. So we'll make sure that, as the weeks go forward, we update those.
I would imagine that buy online, pick up in store, that probably, you tell me, increases as we get closer to Christmas.
Yeah, the rate goes up for sure. The conversion, customers are 19% more likely to convert in the week leading up to Christmas for the retailers that have that. So we expect that to be an increasing trend.
Okay, so what about something we just want to buy for ourselves and maybe should wait for after Christmas? What's going to be, what's going to be the sale after Christmas that I can cash in on?
Yeah, great question. So on December 27th, we forecast that there's going to be savings up to 27% on average in electronics. And you can imagine that because people are, trying to clear the inventory off the shelves that they haven't sold ahead of time. So that's probably your best day, and that's probably your best kind of cluster of products that you can get.
Is there any one toy? I mean, I don't know. I'm not too hip to toys anymore. Is there a toy I've never heard of that is going to be especially hot?
Well, we got Owlies, we're forecasting, Bloom Dolls, Candy Locks, LOL Surprise, OMG Swag. I'm not sure if you've heard of that one before.
I don't think I've heard of any of them.
So there's the number. Fashion Doll, Kindy Kids, these are the ones that we think are going to fly off the shelves this year, and we expect to see a lot of consumption.
Colin,
so get them while they're hot.
Colin Morse is the Director of Product Management at Adobe Analytics. Colin, we'll check in later. It's nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Jen DeSalvo. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, so we talked about holiday shopping. Of course, you had the candy yesterday. There's going to be a lot of holiday eating coming up, and then you're going to worry about getting fit. Susie Miller is the owner of Board 30, which is a fitness facility in Northbrook, and she's in the studio this afternoon. Susie, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So tell me about Board 30. What is this exactly? Because, we'll talk about the challenges of it, but fitness sort of businesses, they come and go.
True.
Board 30 is on its way here. It's arriving.
It is arriving.
Tell me about it.
Okay. So this originated in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I came across it on the internet, and I was very intrigued because it's using all resistance band training.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're actually stretching and strengthening your muscles at the same time. And I was teaching Pilates at the time, and I really wanted to find some sort of cardio for my clients. Whoops.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Santa Fe, New Mexico to learn about the board, and I figured if I thought that it was something really special and different, it was something that I can bring to the Chicagoland area. There was no studios open anywhere in the Midwest. I would be the first or second or third studio to open.
Right.
And when I learned about it and I trained for it, I found that it was just different than any other form of exercise. I've always been an athlete my entire life, but as I got older, I'm 52 years old now, but I've always really stayed in shape. I felt like for me, it was something that I can keep doing at my age, but really strengthen and stretch my body at the same time.
So you'd been teaching Pilates before this?
I have been.
Did you have your own business before then?
I was teaching out of my house.
Okay.
And I got to the point where my house was sort of getting a little too small for my clientele.
That's a good problem.
So yeah. That was good. And
unless you have really big clientele.
My clientele was perfect. I have the best clients.
Right. Okay.
That's for sure. And I needed to move out of the house, and I just thought that this would be a great addition to the Pilates. So, because they're both, like I said, for the ages 50 and older, it's soft on your joints, but strengthening and rehabilitation at the same time.
Okay, so, and you're celebrating your one-year anniversary, right?
I am.
That's
November
a big milestone,
today.
I mean, for a lot of... Today, huh?
Today, yes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, tell me about the idea of jumping into renting space, setting up your own business, you know, when you'd been operating out of your home. That's a pretty big step.
It is a big step. And actually, it took me about a year and a half to find the right retail space.
Okay.
I was trying hard to be able to have a storefront, like we talked about, and the rent was a little bit too high for me. And I knew that I wanted to get into a space where I wasn't going to be losing money in the first month.
Mm-hmm.
So I already knew what I could afford. And when I...
It's nice then that you did start with the base of clients, too, so you had you had money to spend.
Right. So I didn't just jump into it blindly. I knew what I could afford, which was great. And when I found the space that I am right now, the reason why I chose it is because logistically, it's very appeasing to all the different neighborhoods around.
Right. You're in Northbrook.
Yeah. Centrally located.
Where in Northbrook?
I am on Skokie Boulevard in between Lake Cook and Dundee. In the Berkson Office Center.
Okay, so, but no store, so people aren't going to have them by and
people
see you.
People aren't going to see me.
Susie, that's a challenge, isn't it?
It is. I'd like to stand outside on the grass and jump up and down and show them what I do, but I can't.
We were joking last night because I had no trick-or-treaters. I wanted to go out in my yard and say, come on in, I've got candy,
Right. That's what I'd like to do, too. I'd love to be able to stand outside on the front lawn.
You could hire those guys with the signs to stand on the intersection.
I would like my trainers to actually do it because I have the most unbelievable trainers, and they would definitely bring people in.
But how then do you bring people in?
Well, my clients have been really good about referring their friends and family, and it is basically word of mouth. I've been, you know, trying to post on Facebook and Instagram because that's just free publicity. I was actually on WGN News last, right around the holidays.
Oh, good for you, yeah.
New Year's resolution. So that brought me a little bit of exposure. And my Pilates has... It's like I said, they feed off of each other. So my Pilates clients like to try the board classes, and the people in the board classes see me teaching the Pilates, and it goes back and
forth. So this Board 30, though, is fairly new. There aren't many of them. Do they help you? Is it sort of a franchisee sort of situation?
It is. They did it as a licensing fee, so I don't have to be exact with what the other studios are doing. We're trying to be unified, but... It's all resistance bands, and there's cardio, and there's strengthening and stretching all in one. It's a 30-minute high-intensity interval class. There's 22 exercises with a minute break in between. And what's great is that I have clients starting at the age of maybe 25 to 30 and all the way up into some women in their 70s.
So if you've made it for a year, you're doing pretty well. I mean, that's a pretty big obstacle or hurdle to cross.
Yes.
What's your favorite part?
My favorite part for me is probably meeting all the different people, and it's really brought me out of my shell. I think I have always been a little shy.
Right.
My clients might not think so, because the second I get on the board, I become kind of like a Beyonce alter ego, and I act silly and have fun, and I love to make my clients
laugh. That's kind of funny, though. So, in real life, you're not the person you are when you're leading a class.
I think I'm... I think I'm definitely a little quieter, but I feel that I'm really in my element when I'm there.
So what has been the biggest surprise to you in operating your own standalone business?
It's definitely harder than I thought to get my new clients in.
Yeah.
I expected it to happen a little quicker, but I do feel that everything is sort of like climbing a ladder. And it doesn't scare me because I know the people that are there are happy.
You know,
and
you have
enjoying.
A good, you have a good product.
It's I just know an, I do. I really do.
Okay, but you're doing this Facebook and this social media advertising. Oh, radio, I think you should be on WGN Radio, frankly. I think that'd be a perfect fit.
I love it.
But how, I mean, there are people who help you market that and advertise. You haven't taken that step yet.
I really haven't. I've been trying to not spend the extra money.
It's tricky because you'll make more money if you spend the money, but
yeah.
It's a matter of the how much, I guess.
Right. I have to find the right balance, and I have to find the right person. So, you know, hopefully you can help me here today.
we'll see how that works. Susie Miller is the owner of Board 30. It's in Northbrook. How do people find more information about it?
So you can check out my website. It's www.board30northbrook.com. There's great videos on there that really shows you what we do. And to sign up for classes, you can sign up on there, and you can also sign up on the MindBody app.
Listen, it was nice to see you. I congratulations on your one-year success.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully you'll be back for 5 or 10 or 20. Maybe not 20. You'll be retired by 20. Good luck.
Thanks so much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. All is right in the world of unions and strikes. Not only did the Detroit GMC auto workers and the Ford auto workers come to a resolution, but so did the CPS and the CTU, which reached a contract agreement this week, and everyone can go back to work. Yes! It was a strike-heavy month, with the CTU teachers on the picket lines for nearly 15 days, and GMC workers striking for nearly 30. But the CTU and the CPS came to an agreement on the requested changes to see more school nurses, counselors, and increased pay. So it's all happy for the teachers, but not if you live in maybe Lake County and pay property taxes. There are about 3,100 counties in the U.S., and recent data showed that Lake County ranked 5th of the counties that were hardest hit by the 2017 federal tax reform. The report was from Dennis Rodkin at Cranes, and he made a point to say that, quote, the figures don't indicate a drop in the value, but a measure of how much home value won't happen as a result of the changes in the tax. So find out how it impacts you at chicagobusiness.com. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, so earlier this summer, my wife Sharon and I just got an Airbnb in Chicago in Lincoln Park at our old neighborhood, wandered around, had dinner in a few spots, and one of the spots we had dinner in was Mon Ami Gabi, and which I was told at the time is where that used to be Ombria shared that space. At least that's my understanding. And now I read in Cranes that Ombria is coming back. Dalton Barker joins us from the Cranes Chicago Business Newsroom. Dalton, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve. How are you today?
All right. I'm doing well, thanks. Am I right that it was Mon Ami Gabi and Ombria? Did they share a space?
I think that sounds right. I don't have that at the top of my head, but that sounds accurate.
And so tell me about the fact that Ombria is coming back and why that's important.
I think what's the most interesting thing about this piece, besides, you know, a classic coming back to town, is that two of the largest restaurant groups in the country are teaming up together, and we still don't know exactly why that is the case, because both these restaurant groups have shown they can have the best restaurants in North America, you know, in the world. So they have the talent, they have the abilities, they certainly have the capital to be able to do this on their own.
So talk about how this happened. So Ombria was the Let Us Entertain You restaurant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Alinea's group, was it Kokoris, approached Let Us Entertain You and said that he wanted to reopen it or propose the alliance?
Yeah, Nick Kokoris told Rich Melman to, you know, he should bring it back. And apparently this started 4 years ago on a kind of an off-color or a off-hand suggestion from Nick to Melman to bring it back.
It could have been off-color, too. We just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But, he said, hey, why don't you bring this back? And I think Nick brought a good point. There really isn't something like this in town anymore. You know, that kind of classic right. French cuisine, you know, kind of highbrow, fine dining type place. It's kind of been replaced by the cool and trendy spots out in the West Loop, Fulton Market, River North area. So obviously both Nick and Grant and the Melmans believe that they can bring this back and be successful.
So what is it that one company will bring something that another can't? Or, I mean, why the marriage of these two? Have you been able to figure that out?
There's been no clarification of exactly why. Obviously, the folks at the Linea Group, they're trained. Grant is trained. He's a classically French-trained chef. Uh-huh. So maybe he can add something unique that you can't find anywhere else in the world. Maybe that's why. Maybe just Nick and, RJ just want to work together on a project. Who knows? I mean, obviously, they've done a ton of different restaurants. Maybe they just want to try a partnership, try something new.
And so when will I have my first escargot?
Their exact release date isn't known. There's been kind of speculation, summer 2020, sometime in 2020. Just count those long, cold days. It shouldn't be here before long.
Okay, so there's that. You also wrote this week, and we talked a little bit about Molson Coors moving to Chicago. First of all, when did it become Molson Coors? I thought it was Miller Coors.
It was Miller Coors. They're actually retiring the name. Miller Coors was when SAB Miller kind of combined with the Molson Coors Company, Brewing Company. They formed the Miller's Coors, which was the North American unit based here in Chicago. They're retiring that name. They're shrinking the amount of different business units from 4 to 2, and they've renamed it into the Molson Coors Brewing Company. It will be headquartered. The North American headquarters will be here in Chicago.
They're shedding 400 or 500 jobs. Does the moving of the headquarters here, is that a nice thing for the city, or is it not that big of a deal?
I guess we don't really know because there's not been a determination of where those jobs will be cut. Obviously, I think it's never a bad thing when a corporate sure. headquarters moves here. I think it also speaks to how important Chicago is becoming in the beer, spirits, and wine business nationally. You obviously have Mike's Hard Lemonade here, which their big success with White Claw. You also have Beam Suntory. Now you're going to have the headquarters of Molson Coors, the second largest beer brewer in the world. So I think it's really setting the stage that Chicago is becoming more and more influential in the beer, spirits, and wine business.
CEO points out that the beer business isn't doing so well for them. They need to find new things. And one of the things he brought up is hard coffee. I hadn't heard of that before.
I think everybody, we have a story in the book this week about hard kombucha. Okay. I don't really like kombucha on its own. Maybe a little liquor would spice it up a bit.
Right.
But I think that you're seeing everybody in the beer business looking for new trends, and everybody's looking at White Claw and seeing how successful that's been and saying, hey, we got to grow some way and somehow, so let's try different avenues.
And so will Molson Coors move, or do they have like the sort of White Claw product?
They do. They have some different spirit spritzers and some of these various products. You know, the thing is that White Claw almost has a cult following right now.
Right.
So everybody, Anheuser-Busch is in the same boat. They're both playing catch-up in this space. But I think that they're trying to really innovate. And you've seen a lot of different companies relocate to Chicago trying to find those big superstar talents that can maybe develop the next, big product or company or tech or whatever it is. And so this is just following a trend of corporate relocation.
And who knows? It could be hard kombucha coming soon. Dalton Barker writing about that at chicagobusiness.com. Dalton, great to talk to you again. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.